Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the On The Box podcast, a television show podcast on the Anfield Index podcast channel. And today we're going to be discussing a show that recently ended its third season and has been renewed for a fourth, thankfully. We're going to be talking Better Call Saul. I have two Better Call Saul fans on the show. Baji is back. Baji, welcome back to OTB.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to you about this. I know you love it.
I know.
And also, welcome back to Justin Wells as well. Justin, how you doing, mate?
It's all good, man.
It's all good. I love it. It's just beautiful how that's how it came about, isn't it? But we'll talk about that later. So, guys, let's just kick this off. I mean, this show obviously is a spin-off from the blockbuster TV show. Pretty much has made so many, broken records, Breaking Bad. How good, I mean, in both of your eyes, because you're watching this, you must be massive Breaking Bad fans, Baji.
I think it's a slow burner. It's a slow burner for me, because when it first started, I was like, what's this going to be like? The first few episodes were kind of a bit slow, a bit dreary. And then all of a sudden it starts hooking you. And as it starts hooking you, it does it in a way that you don't even realize that you're being suckered in.
Isn't that similar to Breaking Bad as well, though? As in, like, I don't think that started with a bang, really. It took a bit of a while to really get invested into characters and people.
I don't know. I think that with Better Call Saul, it builds up better. If that makes any sense. With Breaking Bad, you could watch an episode and there's like a beginning and an end to that episode quite nicely and quite neatly, and it kind of finishes at one point, leads you very nicely to the next one. Whereas with Better Call Saul, there's a lot more long burning stuff going on. You know, there's a lot simmering in the background that suddenly comes to a crescendo almost as you get towards the end of the season, rather than everything layering on top of itself at once. So I do like that. It makes you and it introduces its characters quite softly and quite nicely. It's not like a car crash, which leads to a character suddenly appearing. The characters are brought in just as slowly, just as subtly. Yeah. And it's a little bit like the pace of Jimmy McGill himself. You know, he's not someone who's completely fast and frenetic all the time. And you can see him slowly ticking away, churning away, thinking of that next con ever so slightly as to how he's going to pull it off. So I like that. I like that reveal.
Justin, would you agree with that? With either that it was, I found it, you know, the slow build similar. This is probably a bit slower, to be honest, than Breaking Bad. But what did you think?
It's definitely a bit slower. I think that one of the key differences between the two is Breaking Bad is pretty much set entirely in the illegal world. And this show has, you know, basically kind of it, while it goes into, you do have some of the characters who are, you know, prominent in the, you know, the drug dealing world of Breaking Bad. Cause I mean, early on in the show, you meet Tuco Salamanca, you have Hector Salamanca actually able to speak. You don't meet Gus Fring until season 3, but you meet Gus Fring who obviously his, you know, he's the big tie-in between the legal and illegal world in Breaking Bad. You know, his connection to Madrigal, which you also see finally start to open up in season three of Better Call Saul, is really the only tie to, like, you know, between the two worlds, that and obviously you have Walter White's brother-in-law being a DEA agent in Breaking Bad. Nothing similar to that in Better Call Saul. But you have also, I mean, I think you have this similar kind of pace. And if you look at the first season of Breaking Bad, it's actually extremely slow. And it's actually, it's very sparse. And it uses the New Mexico desert quite extensively. And you see the New Mexico desert used as a character setting in this show as well. But that seems to be mainly focused on Mike.
Yeah. Totally on Mike. And Mike is obviously another big part of this show, Jonathan Banks. And these two are the ones that go back into Breaking Bad, aren't they? So they're geared around these two, don't they? I mean, I can't remember what happens in Breaking Bad. Is he just like a henchman for him in Breaking Bad in the end?
So Mike Jimmy. In Breaking Bad starts off as a henchman for Saul Goodman, but also once they've established Gustavo Fring's character in Breaking Bad, which also actually takes, I think, into the third season, it's end of the second season, beginning of the third season as well. That's when you realize the connection between Mike and Gus. But Mike is effectively, I guess, kind of Jimmy's dirty work guy, and I guess also kind of Gus's hitman.
Yep. I mean, that's what they're trying to basically build. They're building that now, aren't they? That's where it's getting the build from. So, I mean, for me, there's not much more really you can do non-spoiler on this. I think, guys, if you're listening, it's pretty much these two major or characters in Breaking Bad that they've done a spin-off for, moving it back in time. I think it's set in 2002. And really interestingly, the show starts with Jimmy McGill. So that's also Saul Goodman. And also at the start of this show, his name is Gene, and he's working in, I think, something like a Cinnabon or something. And basically the whole show from there is pretty much a kind of re-storytelling, because he looks depressed and he puts a video on, doesn't he? And it's going back in time. So I don't know. Did you get that? I remember that from the past.
I think we're led to believe that the Cinnabon is where Saul Goodman goes after everything with Walter White goes up. That's his way of establishing a new character. And it's, yeah. I mean, I get the sense that a lot of what we're going to see as the show progresses is how does he get to this point?
I have a feeling. And Baji, you can jump in anytime. I have a feeling that they're going to, obviously they've put that there at the start of season one for a reason. So I reckon they're going to build all the way up to Walter White. Yeah. And Jesse, because I reckon Jesse's dropping too many hints in the press about not being in this. I think he might even turn up in the next season, which is why there's some delays to it next year. But then I think they'll skip the whole of Breaking Bad and show the end. Do you get what I mean? The ending, as in how he gets to this Cinnabon bit. So there's so much more to cover for these guys. It's if it can keep going without getting cancelled. And I think there's something that I could probably put in here, Badger, before you do come in, is about the ratings and stuff of this show. I mean, it's done pretty damn good. IMDb giving it an 8.7. I mean, that's massive. And I've read an article that the ratings dipped. So just say this season, there was only like, I think, 2.76 million or something. Sorry, there was only like, it was getting a 0.5 rating, which is like 1.47 million people watching it. So AMC were worried. But then what happened was, once you get all the DVRs, you know, all the, because obviously people record it and don't watch it live, right? That's how many people watched it live, 1.47. In the end, it raised up to like 4.23 million people watching it, which is fantastic. Like 188% increase. So there are loads of people still watching Better Call Saul. So I think that's why it's got the renewal. They've had to use the stats properly and in context rather than just the live viewing. So yeah, it's and apparently it's really good in the key demographic as well. 220% increase, 1.6, you know, a rating, which is pretty damn good. So the show, from my point of view, is a massive success. I think Rotten Tomatoes as well gives it in its, I think it's in the 90s for it. So ratings wise and reviews wise, I don't think there's a bad word said about it. Baji, would you concur with that? I think the acting's good, the direction, everything's pretty much nailed on with this show.
Yeah, it is. As I said, I like the slow burner about it. I'm pretty much like a lot of the American DVR population, I suppose, where I didn't watch it bit by bit. I pretty much waited for most of season two to have gone by before catching up with it. And similarly with season three, where you just have them recorded, you have them sitting back waiting there, and you go back to them as you can. I.e. like when Liverpool season's finished and you sit there and think, what do I do my weekends now? What am I going to do? Oh yeah, Better Call Saul's on. Right, I haven't finished season two, I better finish that first. Which worked out really nicely for me because I finished season two, got through most of season three, and there was only a couple of episodes of season three left to do. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll wait for those to come along.
Yeah, I waited for the last three, I think, in a row.
Watching it like that makes it a bit easier because it's a slow burner, because you have to wait for so much to happen in order to understand every single episode thoroughly. Watching them all at once kind of helps, because it's like reading a book then, because you just read the book from beginning to end and you've caught everything, rather than reading chapter by chapter, or in this case, episode by episode. And I think that helps digest everything that's going on, because there's so many, as I said, there's so many intricate pieces being built up to what can only be a climax for something, or a entry into something else. Because just like Jimmy McGill, the way that he describes his life, the way that he shows his life, especially in season three, everything is something about something else. Nothing is without a consequence with Jimmy. He can't do something and just let it be. He can't do just something and there's never a consequence to it. There's nothing that, you know, there's no carry on. There's always something that leads him back to his past.
He fucks up a lot. He fucks up a lot. Everything is turns into a mistake.
and almost, you know what, without saying too bad, it's just like it carries on.
It does.
It's a constant with him.
And that's probably the best place to end the spoiler, so we could talk about Jimmy McGill, because with Better Call Saul, that's his name. It is all him. And the whole build of the show is to get to Better Call Saul, you know? And beautifully, I mean, I punched the air when he said it's all good, you know, in, you know, Saul Goodman, and he introduced him in an advert in season three. I was like, yes, we're it's getting good, there. Man. It's all good, man. And she goes, where'd you get the name?
That expression comes out first, though, I think, in season one during a flashback before the beginning of one of the episodes, where him and his friend are basically conning another guy out of a Rolex.
Yeah. Pretending that he dies, and then in season two he actually dies, which is really
Marco.
Cool.
What's it, Marco?
Yeah, Marco. It's his name, Marco.
Marco, fucking hell.
Fucking
that
Marco.
Guy takes me back. Absolutely hysterical.
It's so good. It's so good.
In Last Man on Earth.
Oh, right, okay.
That actor is in Last Man on Earth, and he's pretty damn funny in it.
Oh, okay. That's one to watch, guys. But, I mean...
See, for me, the big one here is actually more Jonathan Banks than it is Jimmy McGill. So Jonathan Banks, who plays Mike, is the one who kind of ticks me over on this more than Jimmy. Because if you've got really old memories like me, and you gave Jonathan Banks hair, you gave him a brown suit, gave him black hair, or brownie hair, as the case may be. But then you can see him as one of the bad guys in Beverly Hills Cop.
Yep.
Because he's
he looks
Berkoff.
Like a bad guy in this anyway. He looks like a bad
guy. He's Stephen Berkoff's right-hand man, isn't he? He's the one who shoots Axel Foley's best mate.
Mate.
Yeah,
Jonathan Banks as Mike, right, cannot ever look like a goodie. His facial expressions in this show and how he is, he just looks like a bad guy. You don't want to mess with this fucker. The guy is so clever. He's so smart. Like, they're a match made in heaven, personally, I reckon, because in terms of them two working together, because obviously Jimmy is dead smart as well. But the way he, like, I mean, for example, can you remember the scene where he wants to get Nacho, he wants to help Nacho, and he wants to get Salamanca, is it Loco?
Tuca.
He wants to get Tuca in jail or something, doesn't he? So he gets battered by him, but he purposely gets beaten up by him.
Yep, in pistol whip. It's just, it's so interesting. But the way that his mind works, Jonathan Banks, Mike, I can't stop calling him Jonathan Banks, Mike, the way Mike's mind works is so intriguing, right? Because you sit there and you think, you know, he's not really going to work out a nasty way here. But he does. And there's always an element of whereby you sort of see the reflection of consciousness in regard, sorry, of conscience, whether we should or shouldn't do something. And then he just goes to that bit where he goes, oh, fuck it, never mind. We'll do it anyway. And I like that about Mike.
Yeah,
he, I like that also, cold nature, clinical nature about him.
He's ruthless, is the word.
Yep.
Absolutely it's also ruthless.
Great that they, you know, because they reveal, you know, that there's always something between him and his granddaughter in Breaking Bad and why that relationship exists in the way it does.
His son and, got killed, right?
Yeah, the revelation of that's done in Better Call Saul. His son killed over effectively what's, you know, Mike's corruptness as a police officer.
Yep. Two coppers killed him, and then he kills them, doesn't he? He fakes being drunk and stuff and takes them outside, and then they plan to kill him, and he turns the tables. And yeah, it adds so much more depth to Mike's character when you know he's going through why he's like that. You know, that's why he's become like that. I know he was corrupt and stuff, but you can actually see that he's depressed. You know, there's a hurting man, isn't it, there?
But the only time I think his character smiles is when he is with his granddaughter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Otherwise, the character, like the signature of his character is very, very little smile. In fact, he doesn't really emote at all, which is, I think, why it's so amazing to compliment the character doing what he's doing, is because typically when we think of actors, we think about them being able to give off a wide range of emotion. Whereas this is, it's like, whereas, you know, the whole anti-hero type of thing comes through. It's instead of giving any sort of emotion, he gives none, and he does it perfectly. Everything is calculated to him. Everything is the knowledge of this is what I need to do in order to make effectively this con work.
Yeah, he's stone cold. That is the word. He is pure stone cold. He will, he's just that. I love him. He's a great character. I think, though, obviously, I always see him as a sidekick. I know Bardi said he makes things tick. I think his storyline's probably a bit more exciting and, you know, gets things going and there's more action. But I just love Jimmy McGill. I love Bob. Bob Odenkirk is phenomenal. He's just, I mean, he was one of the best things about Breaking Bad as well. I know Walter White and Jesse were great, but he would just make you laugh, wouldn't he, when he was in Breaking Bad himself. And in this, he's had to really go back from the cocky guy. And the cocky guy only comes out in cons, if you notice. The cocky Better Call Saul Goodman is always there, but only when he's on a con. But otherwise, don't you see a different, totally different character? He's like really, really, what's the word?
Insecure. Insecure, very, I think, insecure, is what they're looking for.
Insecure. God, he's just not the same, is he? And they've gone through, there was a flashback of him like in jail with Chuck trying to get him out. I think something to do with sex offenses or something. I don't know. But there was one there. And then obviously he's a con man and he's called Slippin' Jimmy. So Slippin' Jimmy McGill. So he's got a past, a really slippery past, should we say? And it's like a rebirth and he's trying to prove himself and he passes the bar and he gets laughed at by his brother. Pretty much.
His brother basically always thinks of him as the kid who stole from the cash register at his parents' store.
Yeah. His brother's a cock, really.
Charles McGill is the biggest fraud of anybody in the show.
Oh, my God. Well, fraud or just...
Well, he definitely don't like disturbed. Batteries.
No.
He wouldn't come on this pod.
No. I want to keep going on about Jimmy, but we keep moving over onto other characters, so we'll come back to Jimmy in a minute. But in terms of Chuck, can you remember those scenes? I think there was one, I think the doctor said he's definitely, you know, he's mentally disturbed. It's definitely not a problem. Yeah. And then the second one was where they're working on the Sandpiper. I think because you've watched season 2 before recently, they're working on the Sandpiper case together. So a really rare moment where they're actually working together. And he just walks outside to get the stuff out of the car.
Yeah.
I mean,
it just
proves everything, right? It proves Jimmy right.
Well, season 3, and I'm not going to do any spoilers here, season 3 nails it in regards to whether it's whether he has a physiological problem.
No, you can spoil it. You can spoil it.
We've given the spoiler disclaimer.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, okay, great. Because it shows, like, when he gets to the court case.
Wicked. What a scene.
Yeah, and he introduces his bodyguard in a very extremely subtle way. So
Yule. I love Yule.
Yep. Introduces Saul Goodman's bodyguard in a subtle kind of way. It shows it then. There's a battery slipped into his pocket. He's sitting there in the court case. And all the way through, he's absolutely fine. And then right at the end, Jimmy uses that. You know, even at the end, even at the bitter end, Jimmy knew what he was doing. You know, the biggest thing that holds Jimmy back has always been his brother. And he's always wanted some kind of acceptance somewhere that his brother will see him as an equal rather than as this submissive, subversive kind of person who's always just going to be a slipping Jimmy. So his brother, you know, he wanted to be more than that. He became a lawyer.
Yeah.
Still not accepted.
Yeah.
And brings in the Sandpiper case. Still not accepted.
Did you not feel sorry at all for Chuck? Because obviously he bought his ex-wife there as well. And then not only that, Jimmy's, there's so many shades of grey to Jimmy. And I'll bring Justin in here. Obviously the Sandpiper case, not the Sandpiper case. This one's the, Vesta Verde, is it?
Mesa Verde.
So there's basically that case. Jimmy's gone obviously and changed all those files and dropped him in the shit. It's Jimmy that's done it. I know they were being bitchy about it, but and you know, taking it away from Kim and stuff, but who we'll get onto in a minute. But the shades of grey for Jimmy here. He did do wrong, right? Get it?
But so did his brother.
Yeah, so that's always the weird thing about the entire relationship, though, is if you look at every single time Jimmy really does wrong or cheats, it's for the goal of trying to do, in his own twisted way, what's right.
Do good for somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, like serve justice.
He's trying to do good. It's just his method of being a lawyer is very different than Chuck's, and Chuck's... You know, Chuck's got that idealized version and love of the law. And that's why he's so offended that Jimmy, who basically will bend rules to try to get what's right for – and if you look at the people Jimmy defends typically or takes on typically, they are people who are being screwed over by a larger power. Not always. There are some times where he's just a cheat. But he's willing to bend rules to do what's right, whereas Chuck would be fine with someone getting screwed over if the law dictated that they should be screwed over.
Yes, I agree with that. He's doing right, like Bardi just said there. He's giving his own justice, which is probably wrong as well, but I get what you're saying. There's a shade of grey, but he's actually trying to do something. He's doing something for Kim as well, because she was starting up, wasn't she, on her own with him. They were doing separate practitioners, but in the same, you know, same law firm type thing. So it was interesting. I mean, so what did you make of this stuff that Chuck? I mean, it's just crazy, right? Like, Bardi, like, he's just... I can't remember the origin of it, how it all occurred for him, but what a crazy thing to have, you know, to convince yourself that you've got this illness.
I just couldn't imagine a life like that.
I know. And his demise, I mean, we might as well talk about it, his demise. I mean, he's just, what is he doing? I mean, what is he doing at the end? Taking, you know, when,
over two episodes, he rips apart his own whole house, all to try and stop his electricity meter from ticking over. And then when he thinks he's done the very last piece of everything, he just completely, obviously, he forgets the sheer fact that the electric meter itself draws a current. He just says that, and he just can't take it anymore. And obviously, then he smashes the damn thing to pieces. And it's just very strange that, you know, as he smashes that meter to bits, he then sits back and then just goes into a stupor almost of self-reflection and thinking, "What the fuck have I done?"
But he kicks the lantern, right? Which then sets
that's what leads to that whole stupor. That's what I mean. So he's just sitting there, you know, and he knows what's going to happen next. You know, it just shows everything about him, something that's been gnawing away at him, gnawing away at him, gnawing away at him, and he doesn't know how to control it anymore. And that's, again, slowly but surely, kick, kick, kick. He keeps gnawing away at the lantern to try and get it to kick over. And then finally, one big push, bang. Good night, God bless.
And Justin, it's weird because he's just obviously left. He's just left. Oh God, what's the total name? McGill. What is it?
Hamlin McGill.
And
HHM.
And they've just. He's just got. Did he get a good payoff? I think he's paid him off from his own money, hasn't he, Howard?
Yeah, he has.
Who is also is Hamlin? One of the Hamlins. He's the junior. So I mean, so he's got his money, but he's still not happy, is he? I mean, that was interesting how at the end of season three, Howard and Chuck, which they've been teasing for, I think, about the whole season, that how they're at each other's throats, you know? They're pretty much not agreeing on anything now. And he just wanted, I think, because he caused so much damage, couldn't get... I think Jimmy was dead clever, though, in making sure that he didn't get insured ever again. Or at least have a very high, you know, premium for his insurance. Jimmy would do anything to get his brother back, which is, it was just mental, and it's led to his demise, Justin.
Well, I mean, to be fair, all these things should lead to his demise. If you look at what Charles McGill does throughout the series, everybody basically is carrying his water through the entire series. His partner, Hamlin, whose first name I can't remember off the top of my head, but Patrick Fabian's character, is, he's there to basically sit there and run the firm.
Howard.
Howard Hamlin is there to run the firm and basically make Jimmy comfortable, but also try to keep Jimmy in a far enough distance away because he knows that Jimmy's not right. I mean, not Jimmy, Charles, because he knows that Charles is not right. And he even will help Jimmy out when Charles asks for it early on, helps Jimmy get a job at Davis and Maine, another firm that's, you know, well thought of that I think was in Santa Fe. And for anybody who doesn't know New Mexico geography, Santa Fe and Albuquerque are the two only cities in New Mexico and are about an hour apart. But he'll do anything to effectively mollify Chuck and kind of keep him at a distance while making sure that he's close enough to appear like he's being supportive of someone who's clearly, you know, off his rocker. But that character, you know, Chuck, basically everybody into his orbit, he pulls into kind of his toxic flow. Like Chuck, for everything you can possibly say about him, is effectively the other side of the coin of Jimmy. He's also a con man. And the only person who doesn't know that Chuck is a con man is Chuck.
He just can't see it. It's mad. What else is there with Chuck? I think we've covered everything. I think that's him gone, I think, from the series. I think he'll only be there in flashbacks now. So there'll be a really bit part role for Chuck, which is a shame. I think he was a good one, but I think there's...
I don't know how he's going to come back from how he got his demise, mate.
Flashbacks. Yeah. Flashbacks. Only flashbacks.
No, that's what I mean. Like, yeah, I don't know how you could actually survive the house burning down.
Oh, God. They could always write that someone rushed in and dragged him out, you know, at times. But yeah, I think that's him done. I think it's confirmed that he's done and that he'll only appear in flashbacks for Jimmy.
Yeah, Michael McKean tweeted basically that, you know, it's been his pleasure to entertain you on the show. So I think that he's made it clear that Chuck's character has definitely taken his own life successfully. And just one side note to drop in. I love Michael McKean, partly because of the fact that he is a hometown hero for me, graduated the same high school from me and from the same town as I am.
Woo, look at this, rubbing shoulders with the big stars here.
I've met him a few times. Super nice guy.
Get him on the pod, yeah? I'm joking.
Look, I'd have to go back to my high school homeroom teacher. That was my connection.
Maybe. Let's try. Right, anyway, Rhea Seahorn. Kim Wexler, she's I love her. I think she's fantastic in this show. I really like her. I think she's the way they bounce off each other, Jimmy and her. She's always the one to kind of like just calm, you know, just say, you know, just a calming influence on him, you know. But then she has her moments when they try and run a con because they've done a few of them, haven't they, in the past, Bargy?
Yeah, they showed quite a lot of them in series one, but definitely in series two, where they go into the bars and pretend to be somebody else.
Yeah.
And what was the ice station zebra or whatever it was.
Exactly. So she's got a great side to her as well.
I don't know. The thing is, though, you know what? I don't know how you guys watch Better Call Saul, but there's one eye on Better Call Saul with a view of what happens in Breaking Bad. Because if you watch Breaking Bad, you sit there and go, right, so where are you in Breaking Bad? And that's always a burning thing that sits over anything that happens in Better Call Saul, is that what's your reference to Breaking Bad? She's nowhere. I don't even think her name gets mentioned in Breaking Bad. So now all I'm actually really interested in when it comes to Kim is that, where did you go?
Yeah, when's she going to die?
do you die?
I think the same thing.
You know, do you die, or do you go off somewhere because you're so pissed off with Jimmy and the way that he's been, and he goes off and does Saul Goodman, and you go, sack this, I want nothing to do with this, and you just disappear off the face of the earth and go somewhere else.
She's got to, I think she's going to either pass away or she's going to run away because it becomes too much for her. Like this season, Justin, in season three, and people have been watching all three seasons of this, she worked herself into the fucking ground.
Yeah. I mean, she worked herself into driving her car off-road into the middle of the desert and crashing into a rock really hard.
Yep. It's just not, she literally did that. Yeah, it was terrible. And she was so close to making it with this new client, wasn't she? But it's clear you can't do all this work on your own. You can't. No. You've got to have a firm.
No, I mean, and that's the part that's extremely difficult for her. And I mean, I'm hoping in some way that we see, you know, in the flashback to Gene at the Omaha Cinnabon, you know, a pan over to the Auntie Anne's that's next to it, and we see, you know, Kim. But that's that's aspirational. I don't think that's going to happen. But I mean, I can't picture her character, because obviously at some point there's going to be the crossover that's going to take Jimmy from being a criminal lawyer to being a criminal lawyer, to take the Jesse Pinkmanism of the first season of Breaking Bad. But I think that's when you're going to probably see Kim and Jimmy find some sort of separation in some way. How that separation works is going to be the open question.
Any thoughts on her character, Justin, before we move on?
I love the character. I think that she humanizes Jimmy.
Yes, quite that a was bit. What I was looking for.
And that's really what it, and he needs it, because of the fact that otherwise you need the point in which you realize that he's not just running games. And I think that towards the end of season three, when you see the specifically the one woman who Jimmy has pitted all of her friends against her to try to get the Sandpiper case settled so he can get paid sooner, you see Kim kind of trying to prompt him to making sure that he doesn't ruin the rest of this old woman's life from a social perspective. And it forces Jimmy to actually have a conscience, to where he outs himself as, you know, as who he really is to everybody in the nursing home, just so that woman can, you know, not be treated as a pariah.
Oh my God. I mean, just remind me of something of Jimmy when he turns all those old ladies against the
one holdout.
Yeah. Just so terrible. Such a horrible thing to do to someone, just to get the money out, you know? So there's that's another shade of grey. Like, you love him, but you do think, what the hell are you doing? You know? And then in the end, Bargy, Harry has to tell them that it was him by, you know, faking that argument outside, but leaving the mic on. It's just like, you do cringe a little bit, don't you? You go, oh God, this is awful.
He's even told he's awful.
Yeah, he's told. He's told he's awful. And these are the kind of kicks he gets in the gut, isn't it? The whole three seasons so far that we've seen, he's just getting battered pillar to post. I mean, even when he's doing his community service, Bargy, he's just...
Even then he manages to find a way.
Yeah, he does. He does.
It's just...
Squeeze the balls. But...
Oh, I tell you... We discussed people who are in one but not the other. And the only, you can't talk about Better Call Saul and not talk about Nacho.
Yeah.
Nacho is fucking awesome. If I had to name one character that I look forward to seeing week in, week out when it comes to the show, it's got to be Nacho, played by Michael Mando. I think Nacho Vargo is fucking brilliant, because he's just... He's a criminal brain. You know, he could be a super brain if he wanted to, but he just won't ever get to that level. He's one of them, because you don't see him in Breaking Bad. And from the research done for this show, you hear that he gets mentioned by Saul when he's surrounded by Tuco and Co. And also by Jesse and Co because he's been kidnapped and taken out to the desert. And he goes, oh no, it was Ignacio, pointing back to Nacho. But Nacho is not to be seen also in Breaking Bad, apart from by name in one episode. So you're like, so what happens to you then? Because Tuco is there, come Breaking Bad. His uncle is there, or granddad, whoever he is also there in Breaking Bad. But Nacho is nowhere to be seen. But Nacho is everywhere to be seen right now. So what happens to Nacho? This is the other thing that does my head in, is where does Nacho go? What happens to Nacho? Does somebody kill him? Does he die? Does he get found out?
So many the future.
But he's brilliant. He's absolutely, because he brings everybody into it. You know, he's the one who brings in Mike. And he will therefore be the one that probably brings in the likes of Saul Goodman.
I also do enjoy the fact that he stole a man's baseball cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
If there's if there's ever a guy who had it coming, it's that guy.
All for the big yellow hammer.
That card just says, like, I'm a target.
I think it just says I'm a tit, to be fair.
Yeah.
Basically, I just think that I just think there was one episode in this season when he's trying to change the pills over for Hector, and he's trying to get the pills into the bottle and then into his jacket, and he's sweating so badly, and I just remember feeling like on edge in that episode with that, and I was like, go on, just do it. And I just remembered that this is what it felt like in Breaking Bad. Obviously, it's exactly the same makers, exactly the same people are making the show, right? So they know how to do it, but it was about time that this show was getting into more of that feel. And obviously season 3 is the closest, I feel, because of the same people, because of Gus coming back as well, and obviously Hector being more prominent as well. It just felt like, you know, wow, we're moving towards Better Call Saul now. We're really getting there. And I thought that scene in particular was done brilliantly. I don't know what you guys think, or if you agree with me or not on that.
So I have a theory on it that I don't know whether or not it'll work out to be true. But obviously in the last episode of Breaking Bad, finally Lydia, who actually was also introduced in season 3 of Better Call Saul, she's poisoned by the ricin packet that's faked as sugar by Walter White when she's grabbing tea with Todd in the last episode. I have a theory that the pill that Nacho is stuffing will eventually be that same ricin.
Ah, okay.
I have no idea how it'll be proven correct, though.
No, we might get there in the future. I'm just glad there's a season 4, mate, because I was really worried because there was no mention of it. And normally these shows that are doing well get renewed halfway through the season and stuff. But this one, they waited for a long time. It's only like a couple of days ago, right? Justin, you said it to us?
Yeah, well, it's also the fact that if you take a look, I mean, you mentioned those viewing stats earlier, and I'm glad that you're still applying your statistics course from last week. But I think I when you said that, the one thing I do want to point out is I'm one of the people who watches it when it's normally on TV. So I'm glad to finally be one in a million.
Yes. Oh, dear Baji, your thoughts on that scene and maybe, you know, maybe how it felt a little bit like Breaking Bad?
I don't know. You know what it is? Breaking Bad, you watched episode after episode, season after season, not knowing what's going to happen next. With Better Call Saul, you don't know what's going to happen next, but you know where it's going. You know where the train ends. You know where the last stop is for this train. And with that in mind, as I said, it changes everything. So anything that happens within, anything that happens in the show, any little niggly thing, I always just sit there and think, right, so are you now going to show what this means in regards to Breaking Bad? This is now going to be the next bit, next bit, next bit. So yeah, I think all scenes are going to be eventually like this and the closest to Breaking Bad as it carries on. I don't think you can just say that the whole thing was as close as it could be, because for me, the whole from beginning to end is just a ways to a means, if that makes any sense in regards to Breaking Bad.
I think basically what I'm saying is the pace definitely picked up in season three in this show, in comparison.
Oh yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah,
because people are saying, "Oh, we switched off because the pace was too slow." But obviously, you need to give these things a build. The people behind this show are not stupid. The people behind this show have had one of the most successful TV shows in history. You know, most popular as well. The show had to go into Netflix exclusively. Because it was cancelled, right? I think, Justin, is that right at the time?
Yeah, it was cancelled after the first season, and then it got... Because the first season of Breaking Bad is only 7 episodes. Cancelled after that.
Was it cancelled after season 1? I thought it was a bit later than that.
They didn't want to make... They had commissioned after season 1, but after season 1 with the ratings, they didn't want to air more of them. So they had made a few of the episodes into season 2, and then the viewing numbers on Netflix went astronomical. And it got put, and AMC was like, okay, we can put this back on the air.
Ah, right. So that's how it worked.
That's why season one was only 7. Season one was only 7 episodes, and they just never gained any traction with it because of the pacing. But going back to something that Paji just said, it's interesting because, you know, there is the comparison with Breaking Bad, and it's obviously the fact that, you know, the two shows do bear quite a bit of similarity, including shared characters. But I think that the reason that they both work in a standalone manner is Breaking Bad is all about the destination, right? You don't know where you're going. Better Call Saul, you know where you're going, but it's all about the journey. So the fact is, it's, you know, you're able to use different narrative devices because, you know, it's thematically just the difference in story and the difference in what you're setting up as far as kind of being a prequel, but not an exact prequel, allows you to explore different things and put different total non sequiturs into the storyline to build characters. And I think the show is a lot more about character building than it is about the events. Because, like, if you think about the first two seasons, some of the stuff that Jimmy gets into, you know, you're introduced to Tuco from the fact that he has two skateboarders two guys who try to scam him, who he sees through, scam an old woman into thinking that they've hit him with their car and breaking their legs, only to find out that old woman's grandson is Tuco. And
yep.
That was not a good move.
He breaks their legs, literally, though. He does, doesn't he? Tuco, in this desert, he actually, instead of killing them, he breaks their legs, doesn't he?
Yeah, but Jimmy pitches it as a victory. As like, I know. I got you guys 6 months instead of a death sentence.
Oh my god, it was really bad, but it was funny as well. I was like, there's Saul Goodman. That is what Saul would do. But like you just said, I think it's the journey. I think it's the journey of, you know, Mike and obviously Better Call Saul himself. So Jimmy, like, he starts off so bad, you know, Albuquerque is where he is. He lives in the back of a blooming, what is it, Vietnamese nail salon or something. It's just not a good place to be, is it really, for him? And slowly, it gets a little bit better, but then he's always having these setbacks, but then big ideas. Like, I think there's one with the billboards when he becomes a hero, when he fakes like becoming a hero or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. Can either of you remember what it was?
He has the he saves the
with
person
the adverts.
hanging from his billboard. He stages someone who's hanging from his billboard that he goes up and saves. But it's all fake. The only person who sees through it is Charles.
Yeah, obviously the only one who sees through it is Charles. He's like, you're a fake and all this. He goes, so what? It worked. And then again, he can't help himself. And obviously the adverts, have you noticed how the adverts are a massive, like, go-to for him the whole way through? And obviously, when he's Saul Goodman, that's what's key as well. He, in Breaking Bad, is his adverts. But in this, he's using them for other things. There was obviously, in season, I think, what did he do? There was another one where he did another advert. Season 2, what was the advert? Season 3, sorry. He's making adverts to make his money back. Like, he sold advertising, but he's then selling it to people, creating adverts for them.
Well, it's because he's not legally allowed to practice law for a year.
And he's got to make his money back, right, from those adverts. It's mental. I love how he keeps using it, though, and he's got to use that. And it starts with the soul. It's all good stuff.
So what do you think is going to happen in season 4, then?
Very, very interesting question. Justin, you go first.
I think we get more Gus. I think we start to see how Jimmy and Gus tie together.
Wasn't that really exciting as well, seeing Gus back?
Yeah. Gus Fring is one of my favorite TV villains ever.
Like, yeah, like, no, as in, not only that, the actor himself, he's such a good villain.
Giancarlo Esposito is amazing.
He's amazing. He's such a good actor. He's brilliant at what he does. Absolutely brilliant. I've seen a few shows with him in now. I've just watched the recent one, The Get Down. He was in that as well. He was fantastic in that.
Could he possibly be the most responsible drug lord ever that's ever been on television? Even more than Escobar.
He's so good.
You know, he really cares about his employees.
Yeah, have you seen the advert on Netflix that they've done just before they released season 3 with him? If you want to become an employee, you have to go through this and all that. It's so funny. It's so good. They did it. that's how they introduced him, that he's coming back. It was such a really good read. Check it out. Really funny. But he is... Like you guys just said, he's such a good actor. And I think bringing him back just made... I think that's what I keep saying. You know, it felt fantastic. He brought something to this season, I thought. And then obviously going back to that place... where did they go to? Where did they go to for the drug... You know, the drug cart, where they go to meet the cartel and stuff?
Yeah, they go to Don Ilaria's place. Yeah.
Like, and that just brings back memories, doesn't it? Because you just think, oh... This is going to be key in a few, you know, when you go into Breaking Bad and stuff, obviously a few years on from that. But it's just, it just made me excited. I love seeing him back and how calm he is, but then how behind that calm, you know, act is just a ruthless, another ruthless, dangerous, you know, I don't know, drug lord.
Yeah. Well, I also just love, one thing that you'll notice is, The arguments that occur, both Stephen Bauer and Mark Margolis, Stephen Bauer being Don Ilario and Mark Margolis being Hector Salamanca.
Yeah.
A little bit of a shout out to Scarface there. Both characters are actually in Scarface. Mark Margolis is Sosa's hitman that Tony kills when he can't put, when he refuses to kill the children in the bomb attack on the TV reporter who's going to expose the CIA and Ecuadorian government. And then you have and then Stephen Bauer obviously plays Manny.
Baji, any other thoughts on Gus before we just sign off?
Not so much on Gus, but in regards to season 4.
Yeah, let's go there.
I think it's going to be a case of whereby you see the divorce of Kim and
yeah, it's going to go downhill big time.
It's got to go that way.
I think I'd really think what's his name's coming in as well, Jesse. I have a big feeling there's going to be introduction of Jesse, a young Jesse, maybe not the same actor, maybe a younger one. I don't know how they do it. How do they make someone look younger? I mean, they try and do it with him, don't they? With Jimmy McGill. So maybe they could do some makeup, but I really do think they need to start doing that. And maybe even a Bryan Cranston appearance, just one fleeting one somewhere, would be very interesting.
I don't think we're going to get the latter. I think maybe Jesse Pinkman you will get, because Jesse obviously knows Saul.
Yeah, in the show, in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't think that you're going to... But Walter's introduced to him at the beginning of Breaking Bad, so I can't see the overlap.
There won't be any overlap. It'll just be... He won't meet Jimmy McGill. He can be, like, shopping somewhere and...
Do you know what I mean?
Just an appearance. That's right, a happenstance. So they don't know each other, they don't meet. It just... Oh...
Well, his brother-in-law's in happenstance, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, his brother-in-law should be featured in a lot of the drug aspect of it, because his brother-in-law is a DEA agent.
Will be interesting to see, because the drugs have come in now and become a bigger part. So it will be interesting to see what they do. I have a feeling that, I mean, these people have worked together before. It's not like it's a new... The great thing about the show is... It's exactly the same people making it. So they will easily be able to get access to these people to bring them back in. And also, when you listen to like interviews and other, they'd love to come back. They would love to just make an appearance somewhere, because why wouldn't you? It's something you worked on and it's a spin-off of it. You would be desperate to just go and show your face. And I reckon the ratings would just go unbelievable if Jesse Pinkman came back as well. I just think, even if it was 2 or 3 episodes, like how Gus was... He wasn't in it for much, was he, Gus? It was more 3-4 episodes, I think, wasn't it? Wasn't more than that, I don't think.
No, I mean, the only thing that you get from there in his involvement is you start to understand where the rift between him and the Mexican drug connection and the cartel connection, you know, really becomes aggravated, because Hector clearly isn't a fan of the fact that Gus is more successful, has a front business that actually works, and that Gus has effectively found a way to also kind of sabotage him, because Gus is employing Mike to sabotage Hector.
Of course. Baji, your thoughts?
I think I echo what Justin said in regards to Gus and Mike and how things go and what happens next. I think also with Gus, you don't get to see that much of his cold side in episode 3. You do by the time Breaking Bad finishes, you realize that he's a seriously cold motherfucker. he takes no shit. So I want to see that, because I like that in Gus. I have this thing about cold characters. Whoops. Sorry, guys.
No, it's fine. The way in which Gus takes out the entire cartel.
Yeah, man, amazing. One of the best scenes, man, of the whole Breaking Bad. I think it just, yeah, you know, so it, good.
Ingesting poison and creating a field hospital for himself is just amazing.
Yeah. I really am tempted to go and watch Breaking Bad again now.
Yep.
That's how good the show is. So.
Because I don't know, it's been a long time since I watched Breaking Bad. I can't remember how Saul lost all his money, because I can't work out how he's ended up at Cinnabon.
Oh, that one is because at the end of the show, when everybody's closing in and Heisenberg's been identified, he actually hides money, and he's hidden money for himself. This is more of a way for him to avoid criminal prosecution, is just to disappear.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I get the disappearance, but that's what I mean. So where's his money then?
He still got the money, but he has to have an alter ego. You know, like how he was Jimmy McGill, went to Saul Goodman. He's now got.
Yeah, okay.
He's on the download. Yep. He's on the down low, yep. So he's got a property and stuff, because he's sitting there watching VCRs. But for some reason, in 2007 or 8, he's still got a VCR.
Yeah, because at that point, also, that's also what he's – one of the things he does before the last two episodes of Breaking Bad is – or the last episode is he gets Walter out of town. Like, they get Walter to New Mexico and get him to safety. I mean, to New Hampshire and get him to safety. It's just – he's miserable.
Agreed. Okay. So we've even said what we think is going to happen in the future. Personally, I hope there's more from Gus. There's more introduced. You know, there's more characters from Breaking Bad introduced. I think that's got to be the way. Well, they've given you evidence of showing that's what's happening in season 3. So season 4, I don't see why not. That would really push this show on even further. And I think it'll just keep getting renewed if they keep doing that. So fingers crossed. Thank you so much, Baji and Justin. Great to talk. Better Call Saul with you both.
It's a pleasure to talk to you too.
Thank you for having us on. And always a pleasure talking to Justin.
Okay. And we will be back with more television shows. I think Billions is next week. I think Baji might be back again.
I'm also petitioning for Only Fools and Horses.
Yes, we will. I love that show as well. But I think there might be like 10 of us on it. That's the problem. Okay. Right. So yeah, before we have the mass Only Fools and Horses, I think we might wait till Christmas, because that's fitting for that one. But yeah, we'll be back with more On The Box very, very soon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.